Yes, we are.
Let's move it on. Everybody, welcome to episode 41 of the Scary Dead Podcast.
Yes, we are there.
This is landing on, not September. What the hell's wrong with my head? July 24th, 19. I've been putting my birth date into a lot of things lately, like setting up stuff for the business.
So it's kind of popping up.
So anyway, this is July 24th, 2017. This is not September 29th, 1975. So if it was, we'd be super magical. We're only vaguely magical. So, July 24th. Episode 41 of the Scary Dead Podcast, in which we're going to continue our discussion of vampires, only this time it's going to be in more folklore and pop culture. So, join us, kick back, enjoy the show. How you been doing, Scotty?
Not too bad. Playing with toys. As you can see here, I'm putting on my Evel Knievel belt onto my 1979 Evel Knievel action figure.
That's what you would do with a Evel Knievel action figure, unless you were going to throw it across the room and see if it broke.
I'm very excited to actually have one with the helmet this time. So,
I wonder how many of those things got set on fire over the years.
I know mine did.
Probably a lot.
You got to have the pyrotechnics when you do the jump, and sometimes things happen.
All right. Let's just get into the meat and potatoes. We're going to go right into old business history segment. We got a lot to talk about, so we're kind of moving through the intro parts pretty quick here. So, on this date in history, 1411, the Battle of Harlaw, one of the bloodiest battles in Scotland, takes place. They had me at bloodiest. 1487, citizens of Leeuwarden, Netherlands, strike against a ban on foreign beer. How bad would that suck?
Yeah.
If they banned imports, we'd all strike.
A lot of folks would have a rough time with that.
No good. Alrighty. 1567, Mary, Queen of Scots, is forced to abdicate and is replaced by her one-year-old son, James VI. How much does that suck? You're no good. We're going to give your job to a one-year-old. All right, let's see. We're going next here. High body count. 1915. The passenger ship SS Eastland capsizes while tied to a dock in the Chicago River. A total of 844 passengers and crew are killed in the largest loss of life disaster from a single shipwreck in the Great Lakes.
Wow.
Bam. All right, let's see here. Moving on. I didn't get a chance to write all this stuff down. I'm kind of going from cliff notes here. Some of it's not the most interesting stuff. Some of it's pretty damn interesting. So, let's see. Notable births. So far, nobody of interest.
Need some Jeopardy music playing in the background.
Yeah. I can edit this out. I probably won't, but I can.
Yeah, just let it be natural. Nice and organic.
Lots of boring people.
Somebody, come on. Somebody had to have been born.
Zelda Fitzgerald, the insane wife of F. Scott Fitzgerald. That's one. Hey, John McDonald. It's some guy
with the last name of a fast food chain
or a farmer, depending on how you're looking at it. All right, let's get down here. Where are we going? Chris Sarandon.
Okay.
1942, this date. Happy birthday to Jack Skellington.
Yes.
Hey, see, I told you there was a reason.
It was worth the wait.
We needed to look this stuff up here. We're almost down. Linda Carter, Wonder Woman. Happy birthday to her.
Very nice.
1951. All right. We're moving along. Barry Bonds, the American baseball player who has the asterisk next to his record.
Yeah.
Um I don't want to say that's it because there's still some folks, but nobody's really popping out at me here. If it's your birthday and you think you're important, you can hit us up in the comments.
Just let us know and we'll give you a birthday shout out.
All right, notable deaths. Peter Sellers in 1980.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty major. Let's see here. This is what I get for not writing it down.
Yeah, it happens.
I got my dates wrong. I wrote down a whole different date, guys. Keeping up to this Monday thing. Yeah, well, hey, luckily nobody else important died on this date. Except for all those people that died in all those disasters we talked about.
We just talked about
the events part.
Which were pretty high body count in the events part.
So, yeah, if you were any of those people who died in those events and you want to be included on the notable deaths side, just send us an email. I'll cut back in. You'll hear us talking. You'll hear a strange little like cut scene like Martin Smith. Alrighty.
Well, by the time this actually gets released, this will have happened already, but Jigsaw, the 8th installment of the Saw series, is going to be coming out, and we'll have a little sneak peek at San Diego Comic-Con, which has already occurred by the time this actually drops. The poster was recently released, and it's a really cool poster, just of the pig's head that Jigsaw would wear from time to time in the films, hinting to the fact that, you know, possibly we may be having a return of Tobin Bell character, even though he's dead, or some form of it. Synopsis of the movie, which has been released, is bodies are turning up around the city, each having met a uniquely gruesome demise. As the investigation proceeds, evidence points to one man, John Kramer, Jigsaw. But how can this be? The man known as Jigsaw has been dead for over a decade. Has an apprentice picked up the mantle of Jigsaw? Perhaps even someone inside the investigation may have been similar to, I think it was number 7 is where that occurred. One of the policemen actually took the mantle of Jigsaw and began committing crimes in his name. But the poster that has been released is really, really cool.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty badass. So that's something to look forward to. Hopefully they can freshen up that franchise a little bit because it started getting pretty stale.
There's only so much rust color sepia tone you can throw on something before you're finally just like, dude. throw some WD-40 on it.
Another little bit of news. As someone who works in the comic book field, Archie comics are always hard to take. Got tons of them. Nobody wants them. The book values on Archie comics are usually pretty high, but the actual retail values are pretty low. Archie comics is launching... You might be wondering what this has to do with Scary Dad. Archie comics will be launching Jughead the Hunger. They had a one-shot they came out with last year where...
Like a vampire Jughead?
Jughead was a zombie, pretty much. And they'll be coming out with a series now, starting in October, called Jughead the Hunger. During full moon, Riverdale falls under siege. After discovering his dark lineage, in marches Jughead the Hunger. Jughead Jones struggles to put his past behind him with Betty Cooper, werewolf hunter, and Archie Andrews hot on his trail, trying to stop him from... Essentially, it's the Howling meets Jughead. Very exciting. Artwork looks pretty cool, but once again, it actually looks kind of neat. So we'll see how that flies.
I heard they turned Sabrina the Teenage Witch into like a satanic comic.
Oh God!
like she's no longer a cute little bewitched little like, you know, magic wand witch.
She's actually like, satanic.
Yeah.
Wow.
She's part of a satanic cult and. She's trying to avenge her father's death, who's been, like, his soul was taken by, like, oh my God.
Total 180 on that one. In some other news, which I've been meaning to get to for a while now, but it has been mentioned on the Scary Dad podcast before, the Yorkshire Ripper, Mr. Peter Sutcliffe, has actually confessed on tape to the killings that he has been accused of, is in jail on. So that's pretty big news, actually. Yeah, he's denied it up to then. At the age of 71, he finally decided to admit that he was on a mission to bump off prostitutes when he stalked and bludgeoned Tracy Brown, 14, accidentally. He wasn't supposed to kill her. he believed that she was a prostitute, but she actually wasn't. But once he killed her, he for a second he thought that he should stop and just shut down this whole idea, but decided to go ahead and go on his murder spree right after. 2 months later, killed his first known victim, prostitute victim, and then went apeshit for the year of 1975 and became known as the Yorkshire Ripper for the rest of his life.
Wow.
So, yeah, he has actually come out and confessed to the murders themselves, which is, like I said, it's pretty big news.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, we've mentioned him here before. We mentioned the series of crimes before, and now he's owned up to it, so.
Well, he's been in jail for it.
Yeah, so, he's been in jail for a while. Just he hasn't actually admitted to it, but he's confessed. He's come out and come clean. So that is the news.
All right, all right. So let's get into vampires. Last week we talked about vampiric trees, vampiric goats, vampiric cats, tigers,
manatees,
man bear pigs. Do we
drop bears?
Who, do we touch on the man bear pig?
No, we didn't do man bear pig. We didn't do drop bears actually either. Which yeah. I apologize to my daughter for that. She was looking forward to hearing about drop bears on our podcast, but we might talk about that a little bit today because that goes into the mythos. That is one of the legends that are is not easy to prove true.
Well, whenever we talk about vampires, we've already gone through the cryptid side. We've already talked about the real life stuff. So we're going to try to go like a little bit more mystical, a little bit more mysterious, and a little bit more fun. Not that the cryptids weren't fun. I'm talking about like, this is the kind of stuff where if you want to dress up and throw some fangs in and be a vampire for Halloween, you're probably not dressing up as a chupacabra. Let's hope to God you're not putting glitter on yourself and trying to be a sparkly vampire, because that's just unacceptable.
So pretty.
But let's get into the myths and legends of the vampires. So basically there's a vampire legend in just about every culture.
Yes.
Whether it's religious, whether it's biological, whether it's just myths and legends and stuff, basically our kind of modern take on things. My dad tells the story of how like whenever he was a kid, but also whenever he was a radio DJ, York Top 40 Radio, and that was everything. That was Led Zeppelin and Michael Jackson and, you know, Motor City stuff, you know, Motown, and just basically all anything that could be categorized as rock and or roll was on Top 40 Radio, and it wasn't strongly categorized. You didn't have heavy metal, black metal, death metals, you know, that kind of stuff. You didn't have, you had certain categories, but you didn't have it, everything, like every single band have its own category of music.
Right.
That needed its own separate venue. Like, it was pretty much just kind of a watershed of everything.
Yeah.
So vampire tales come from zombie tales, from actual, like, demons, to creatures, animals, shapeshifters, werewolves, basically. A lot of the things that we think of as all of these separate things can be categorized in kind of the same sort of mythos as the vampire.
Mm-hmm.
In that it's basically, it's an undead person. Undead meaning previously living, dead, and then risen again. So they're not... they're somewhere between alive and dead.
Right.
And so zombies can be considered that same sort of thing. And early vampires, prior to what would be like a 19th century romantic portrayal, vampires were pretty nasty. They were pretty nasty creatures. They were essentially zombies, like a walking dead.
They were living dead.
They were a walking dead zombie. Which, if you look at the Walking Dead zombie, they prey on human flesh, and, you know, it's not exclusive to blood. They just prey on the living.
Right.
So, a lot of the stuff we're going to talk about today is just that kind of creature. The Walking Dead zombie would be what you'd be called a revenant. It was dead, It rose again for whatever reason, and it walks. It doesn't really necessarily burrow. It doesn't necessarily find its grave and hide out. Although, if it's got a place that's cold and dark where it can
hide out,
hang out and sleep, then it will. Because mm-hmm. they can't be moving around all the time, or else, you know, the villagers would just club them over the head and they'd go away. So, but textbook definition: a vampire is a being from folklore that subsists by feeding on the life essence, generally in the form of blood, of the living. In European folklore, vampires were undead beings that often visited loved ones and caused mischiefs or death in the neighborhoods they inhabited when they were alive. They wore shrouds and were often described as bloated and of ruddy or dark countenance, markedly different from today's gaunt, pale vampire, which dates from the early 19th century. Vampire entities are recorded in most cultures. The vampire was an arcane subject popularized in the West in the early 19th century. After an influx of vampire superstition into Western Europe from areas where vampire legends were frequent, such as the Balkans and Eastern Europe. Local variants were also known by different names, such as Strega in Albania, Vreculus in Greece, and Strigoli in Romania. The increased level of vampire superstition in Europe led to mass hysteria, and in some cases resulted in corpses being staked and people being accused of vampirism.
It was an easy way to get rid of your neighbor.
Yeah. Well, and we talked about it in one of the earlier episodes of, you know, that whole thing about witches.
Witches, right.
And that whole perspective thing of it's easy for us to look through our lens and be like, oh, well, they were just, you know, picking on that poor old lady. But at the end of the day, if you started having livestock die or crops fail, and you had to figure out some reason.
Matter of life or death.
And once you've already given the worm your medicine, and the goats are still falling over, you got to find out something.
Right.
And it's a matter of life or death. So, I mean, the stakes were much higher back then.
Yeah.
So, especially, church was not something that you just did on Sundays. You lived that shit. You breathed it. It was constant. So, I don't think we need to get into entomology. Basically, vampire just means bloodsucker.
Yep.
The notion of vampirism has existed for thousands of years. Cultures such as Mesopotamians, Hebrews, ancient Greeks, and Romans had tales of demons and spirits, which are considered precursors to the modern vampires. So even, like in Hebrew culture, there's a story of Lilith. Lilith was Adam's first wife. So, God created the garden, God created Adam, Adam wanted a companion, God gave Adam Lilith. Lilith was willful, and she didn't obey. She wasn't obedient. And God cursed her. And she became, she was forced to walk for eternity, not dead, but feeding on the essence of people.
Excuse me.
So, I mean, that goes all the way back, Gesundheit.
Thank you.
That goes all the way back to the beginning.
Right.
You know, as far as, like, in the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth, and then like 7 days later, there were vampires.
They've been here since the beginning.
They've been here just as long as everybody else. But there is a whole bunch of like angels and demons and their different roles and stuff. I actually have this kind of neat book here that I got. You know, it's mostly, when I say the word fiction, it's mostly talking about fictional vampires and you know, stuff out of pop culture.
Mm-hmm.
But there is some really neat stuff about kind of just, you didn't have a knowledge of proper decomposition. I mean, that's not exactly true, and it's unfair to the people who came before us. Because I can tell you right now, I know my 6-year-old has no idea about the birds and the bees sex. I can guarantee you, Trudis, pretty much any 6-year-old prior to about 1970 knew where the baby goats came from, knew where the baby cows came
right.
from.
Right.
They come from fucking, and everybody knows it. It's not a mystery, and it's not a stork. So any farm kid knows.
Knows the birds and the bees.
How life works and how death works. And they know that if you put something in the ground, it rots. Or if you leave it there, it rots or whatever. Mm. People are pretty smart and they know how it works. Problem is whenever the body that you put into the ground does not necessarily...
Do what it's supposed to do.
And there's a lot of reasons for that. Maybe it's unusually cold. Maybe the ground you put them in is absent of life. I mean, you can do this. You can go into pretty much any suburban lot, you know, any neighborhood. If you bury somebody in somebody's true green chem lawn front lawn, they're not going to they're not going to go away because there's no bugs in there. There's no nematodes
and
critters easily. To break it down. A lot of my customers are from Middle East, India, Pakistan. You know, I work in convenience stores. And I was talking to this one guy who was saying how, like, they'd have, in their city, they'd have this, like, this graveyard, right? And think of a grid. And it could hold, you know, several hundred or whatever. But think of a grid, think of a battleship, A1, you know, down the line. So somebody dies, they dig a hole in plot A1, they bury them 6 feet down, they cover them over, somebody else dies, they go to A2. And they just follow the grid till they get to the end. By the time they get to the end,
A1 is finished.
A1 is empty.
Right.
There's nothing left. They can dig all the way down 6 feet under, maybe find a few teeth, but the bones are gone. It's composted. It's gone. The body's gone within a few short years. Now that the American diet has taken over that area, the
preservatives,
they're getting back to A1, and they're pulling out bodies. Like they're hitting bodies. They're no longer hitting composted soil.
Right.
And it's causing a problem. So they're having to dig deeper to start off deeper
on A1. Yeah. You gotta go 6 feet for the next one.
Right. But all of those people in plots A1 through A7 or whatever, there's nothing unusual about them. They're not necessarily vampires, but for generations, all of their ancestors have been swallowed by the earth.
Right.
Now you got these crew that ain't going away. You know why? You know it's because of Minnesota. You know it's because of their diet. But if you didn't know why, you'd suddenly think, "Uh-oh, what's going on with this?" So the causes of becoming a vampire were many and varied in original folklore. In Slavic and Chinese tradition, any corpse that was jumped over by an animal, particularly a dog or a cat, was feared to become one of the undead. A body with a wound that had not been treated with boiling water was also at risk. In Russian folklore, vampires were said to have once been witches or people who had rebelled against the Russian Orthodox Church while they were still alive. That means everybody that's not Russian Orthodox is a vampire. But mostly what it was you'd have people that were not decaying the way they should.
Yeah. And you had to come up with an answer as to why the bodies were still holding up the way they were.
And that brings us to the story of Mercy Brown, the first American vampire. So in 1892 in Rhode Island, Exeter, Rhode Island, several members of the Brown family caught tuberculosis. Her mother and her sisters died. She had it as well. And then she was died. Then her brother got it. But tuberculosis is consumption. You slowly lose weight. It's a lung disease, but in fighting it, you can't put on weight. No matter how much you eat or drink, no matter what you do, you continually lose weight and you finally die. So Mercy was exhumed. Her heart was burned. Her ashes mixed with water and given to her brother. But Edwin died 2 months later anyway. But she was considered the first American vampire. It caused a massive hysteria where people were frightened in 1892.
It's not that long ago.
It's not that long ago. But, yeah. So who are some of your favorite vampires?
At this point in time, Cassidy, of course, from Preacher, like I've mentioned before. Vampirella has always been a real cool one with me, just the fact that the origin story of Vampirella has nothing to do with Earth or being from here at all. She's from a planet where there's all vampires. They live off of blood, which the rivers are flowing with blood for them to live off of. It just ends up in our plane. And next to that, I'd have to say the Fright Night Vampire was another one that was real big with me. Chris Sarandon was excellent in that role, and that was a really, really good vampire. When it comes to Bram Stoker's Gary Oldman, not a big fan. That particular vampire I didn't care for too much. At this point, honestly, Cassidy is the one for me, because Cassidy answers a lot of questions and a lot of skepticism that I had about vampires before to make them a lot more realistic.
Well,
definitely. And yourself?
Oh, man. Well, I got to obviously start off with Dracula. I mean, not necessarily Gary Oldman's, although I did like the Bram Stoker version in the movie. What really kind of got me into vampires in general was... It's going to have to be Lestat.
Okay.
I was a comic book guy. I was, you know, reading Sandman and a couple of other things. And, I had read Salem's Lot already, Stephen King. But Stephen King's vampires in Salem's Lot are not characters as much as they are straight-up demons.
Beasts.
They're monsters.
Yeah, they're monsters.
So there wasn't any kind of... There was no vampire character to follow. There was no sympathetic character that you would be interested in where they came from or what. They were dangerous creatures that needed to be burnt. Straight up.
Yep.
But I love that story, and I read it once every couple of years at least. But I remember coming across a Vampire Lestat comic just at a quarter bin back in the 90s, and it was like part two of Vampire Lestat. And I read it, and I realized, like, oh, that's... This is part of a book, right? So I went and got the book, realized it was part two. Can't stand that shit. So I went back and grabbed Interview with the Vampire,
which is a great book.
Read Interview with the Vampire and Lestat, like, back to back. And although she played sort of fast and loose with the rules, I mean, you can't... Like, there's certain rules with vampires, and we're talking about the folklore vampires. They're pretty universal. Like, decapitation pretty much works.
Right.
Stake through the heart pretty much works.
Sunlight.
Sunlight pretty much works. Some to more degrees than others. Religious symbology, that was kind of one of those things that it would be affected by the demon who was affected by that culture.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, if you don't believe necessarily, like, would a Muslim vampire be affected by a crucifix? Well, on the surface, you'd have to answer yes, because for demons and angels to exist, then that means the whole...
They fall under that.
That whole hierarchy exists, and if this is a demon, then even if he's, you know, even if his subculture is of a different faith... He still has to answer that same higher power.
Right.
So, but the Anne Rice vampires were the ones that really got it for me, because they were
the Interview with Vampires, Anne Rice's best book that she's written. Oh. It's excellent, excellent book.
Yeah. So that's where I came from, was the Interview with the Vampire stuff. After that, I mean, there's quite a few good stories, you know. But then the vampire is that one that's like everybody wants to do the untold story, and they want to change the rules just that much more, and they want to be like, okay, well, they actually can stay in the light, and they're more like this, and you're taking it further and further. So vampires now are less cursed demon, you know, damned soul, and more just kind of like disaffected superhero.
Yeah.
They've got all kinds of supernatural powers, not a whole lot of weaknesses, and no real reason to be upset about being what they are. And, you know, at least in Interview with the Vampire, Louis was upset about having to take life.
Yeah.
You know, that was his thing. And that's what, you know, you can be like, oh, well, he was mopey all the time. Well, if...
He was stuck in the...
If you had a actual respect for life and you were forced to go out every night and kill somebody, it might give you a complex, too.
Yeah.
And then if you have your buddy standing over your shoulder laughing at you for feeling that way, it would probably piss you off, too. Because you can't just fucking call in for pizza. You know?
Like, and it's not like you have a whole lot of people you can talk to about it.
Right. So, I mean, his character made sense. Whether you liked the fact that he was mopey or not, you know, he turned out to be one of the stronger, you know, once he finally got over his basically aversion to killing people, he became one of the stronger ones in the series. Mm-hmm. So, you know. In the Balkans, a vampire could be killed by being shot or drowned, repeating the funeral service, by sprinkling holy water on the body, or by exorcism. But mostly, garlic in the mouth, shooting a bullet through the coffin, dismembered and pieces burnt, mixed with water, and administered to family members as a cure. Or sometimes they just put a lemon in the mouth.
Like, guys, I made some chili.
There's some serious extremes. Then there's some theological problems. The non-decay of the vampires' bodies could recall the incorruption of the bodies of some of the saints in the Catholic Church. That's problematic.
Yes, for the Catholic Church for sure.
All right, on the beatification of the servants of God and the canonization of the blessed, written by Prospero Lambertini. In his opinion, while the incorruption of the bodies of saints was an effect of divine intervention, all the phenomena attributed to vampires was purely natural or the fruit of imagination, terror, and fear. In other words, vampires didn't exist. Of course that's what you would say whenever you're protecting one that, like, you got this guy who's, like, laying in this coffin and he's not rotting.
Right.
That's precisely what he would tell you to say. Conspiracies, guys. You got to follow the money. Oh, man. Oh, man. Got vampires in every culture.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely... it crosses the entire spectrum for sure.
Here's why vampires don't exist.
Okay, you gotta burst our bubbles, right?
Gotta burst our bubble. In 2006, a physics professor at the University of Central Florida wrote a paper arguing that it's mathematically impossible for vampires to exist, based on geometric progression. According to the paper, if the first vampire had appeared on January 1st, 1600, and it fed once a month, which is less often than what is normally depicted, and every victim turned into a vampire, then within 2.5 years, the entire human population of the time would have been vampires.
That's exactly why Cassidy makes more sense. Because Cassidy can feed off of blood from any animal. It can be a dead animal. It could be blood that was just excreted from a cow, you know, the week before, and it can help him regenerate.
In one of the more notable cases of vampiric entities in the modern age, the chupacabra of Puerto Rico and Mexico is said to be a creature that feeds upon the flesh or drinks the blood of domesticated animals, leading some to consider it a kind of vampire. Chupacabra hysteria was frequently associated with deep economic and political crises during the mid-1990s. Vampires, man.
They're everywhere.
Mostly I think it's things with rabies and people in cold cultures not decaying the way they should.
Decaying the way they should, and people having to come with an explanation for it.
Not only that, but, you know, there's a lot of people who've been dead that woke up.
Yeah.
Just like, what's up, guys? What's going on? They're like, oh my God, you've been dead.
You know? You gotta realize, you know, there was a time when, you know, the test for somebody being dead wasn't, you know, checking the heart rate or putting them up to a monitor and seeing, you know, what their heartbeat was.
Yeah.
It was just kind of, you know, yeah, he's dead. He's not moving.
I kicked him a couple of times.
Yeah, I pushed him with my toe and he didn't flinch, so he must be dead.
A number of murderers have performed seemingly vampiric rituals on their victims. Serial killers Peter Curtin and Richard Trenton Chase were both called vampires in the tabloids after they were discovered drinking the blood of the people they murdered. Similarly, in 1932, an unsolved murder case in Stockholm, Sweden was named the vampire murder because of the circumstances of the victim's death. The late 16th century Hungarian countess and mass murderer Elizabeth Báthory became particularly famous in later centuries' works, which depicted her bathing in her victim's blood in order to remain her beauty and retain her beauty and youth. So that's Elizabeth Báthory.
Yes. Who we've spoken about many times on here.
What a bitch.
She was sick. But with the guy with his mathematical conjuring of why vampires shouldn't be real, you know, it may not necessarily be true that it's passed on to the next victim. Depends on how the blood is drawn. You know, unless the virus is passed through, you know, secretion of body fluids from a bite, you know, if the blood is taken a different way, it's never going to be passed on. You won't have another vampire form. You just have a dead body. So
true that. Well, no, I thought it was just funny because he did the math based on 1600. So 15th century. He's like, well, the population of the earth was this, and if once a month a vampire fed, then everybody would die. I'm like, that, okay, well. Then we'd have the Vampirella world.
Yeah, yeah, it would exist on that plane. Vampirella.
Mm-mm-mm.
She has taken many forms over the years. Lost Boys is another great vampire story, too. Those guys were
interesting, to say the least. Some of their magnum opus. Kiefer Sutherland's. I mean, he's been a lot of great stuff, but he'll always be David.
Oh, yeah. By far.
The Frog Brothers. I always wanted to get one of those. I wanted to get a copy of The Vampires Everywhere.
Yeah.
And then I looked it up and I discovered that it didn't actually exist.
Right. It was made for the show.
Yeah.
For the movie. Which happens a lot, apparently.
There's somebody who actually has a framed copy because it is a book, but it's blank pages on the inside. It's just a cover, but yeah, for them to flip around, you know. But that cover looks badass. You got your Fright Night right there.
Yeah. Fright Night was a great story. That very well done. It was scary as hell. When I watched it, the first time I saw Fright Night, it scared the shit out of me. Just the idea of that being next door, you can't do anything about it.
Nobody believes it.
That's when I learned that once you invite a vampire into your house, he can come whenever he wants. It was that movie that taught me that.
Mm.
And that was the first shape-shifting vampire to a werewolf that I had seen also. Where they had shape-shifted into a wolf, which Evil Ed, he did that.
Yeah. Well, I thought with Fright Night, it's just like, it's all kind of funny and campy. I don't want to say necessarily campy, but it's all kind of just like...
It's loose. It's loose
until Evil Ed's walking down that alley.
Yeah.
And then it all becomes real, and he kills a child.
Yeah.
I mean, Ed's just a teenager. I mean, he's just a kid.
He's a kid.
And he's like, hey, here's your choice. Like, oof. And it just gets scarier from there. He takes his girlfriend. I mean, well, and that was the thing with Salem's Lot. That's what made it so scary. Is it's very much a contagion. You know, it starts off pretty slow. Well, that doesn't start off slow at all. It starts off with the vampire's helper sacrificing two kids in the forest. Like, kidnapping two kids and sacrificing, yeah. Sacrificing one of them to Satan, and then the vampire turning the other one into a vampire. And then the main character, like, not the main character, but the kid, you know, wakes up in the night and sees this kid, like, floating out his window, like, wanting to be let in. And he has Aurora models. He's a monster maker. He has Aurora models. He's got a Dracula model that's got a little crucifix on it. And he shows him the thing, and he, like, flips out and flies away. And then, like, kids stop showing up to school. And, like, shit just gets worse and worse and worse. It's bad. And it's just pervasive. Like, it's just, like, nobody notices is going on until, like, people are just kind of sick. And then stop showing up for work. And then it just kind of gets worse and worse.
Right.
And then you're surrounded by vampires.
With nowhere to go. With nowhere at all to go.
It's just a hive.
There have been so many different iterations of vampires over the years with movies and stuff. I mean, we could talk for hours just the different types. You know, from the comedic to... Love at First Bite. I remember that movie. I actually have that on VHS somewhere. Vampire in Brooklyn. You know, there were the comedic stuff, and there was serious movies, and there's been so many iterations of vampires and Dracula in the whole story.
The Hunger with David Bowie.
Right, all the Blade movies. I mean, you've had so many different types. The Blade movies, I love those. I think those have done a really great job, especially showing... giving an origin as to how vampires can exist within our culture itself in large numbers.
Suntan lotion?
Well, not just that. Just with the people. the people that take care of them. You know, what do they call
familiars?
Them? Familiars. Yeah. It's great the way they did that story. And the whole Blade character himself is just badass.
Yeah. I remember I saw Blade when I... That was the one where they have the rave with the splash and blood.
They bring the guy in there, and he doesn't know where he's at. All of a sudden, blood starts coming out of the fire suppression system.
So, immature kids that we are. I don't remember if you remember the movie for Interview with the Vampire.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this scene. It's probably the most intense scene in the movie. It's when they were at the Theater of the Vampires in France.
Mm-hmm.
And so Louis and Claudia are invited by the French vampires. They finally reveal themselves, and they're like, oh, come to this. And it's this whole avant-garde death theater thing in this little French theater. And then the scene goes really, really dark, and they bring out this girl, and they basically strip her, and she's screaming. She's asking for help, but the theater people think that, you know, the audience thinks it's part of the show. So she's screaming for help from the audience, and the audience is like, take me instead. He's like, you'll have your turn, and they bring her back, whatever. And then very slowly they strip her, and then they, like, go in on her and, like, drain her blood and then carry her off the stage. And it's, like, a very disturbing scene. Except for, I think this is the day it came out. This poor girl's standing there, and she's, like, in this gossamer dress. And the vampires start to pull it off of her, and it's a nude scene. And it's a full frontal nude scene. And my buddy Jason with his laser pointer is like, like drawing circles around the parts. Like the whole theater, you hear them all. Like certain, some people are like, damn it. Other people are like,
juvenile at its best.
Oh yeah, dude. Stupid ass teenager. It was not long after that they banned laser pointers in movie theater. Jesus.
I could just see some of the more traditional like big fans of Anne Rice just being furious about that happening.
And you're not going to see where it came from.
The laser pointer is an amazing invention, I swear. That has caused so much drama and just annoyance to so many people.
I know. It sure did highlight those boobs. It was cool because the way he did it, it was like as if he was doing a presentation. It's like circled like
right here.
Right here.
We're going to move over here.
Oh, shout out to Jason Jordan. Well, I don't know about you, but half my notes got cut off and I forgot the first half of the notes. We talked about vampires. We'll
probably
have to probably hit this one up again later in the future.
And that's not a problem. We can always do that.
But I think that does it for episode 41.
We have covered vampires through cryptids, through
chupacabras,
drop bears.
Explain the drop bear again one more time.
The drop bear, once again, my daughter is obsessed with koala bears. Matter of fact, her favorite song right now is a song called Eucalyptus, which is available on iTunes. Total instrumental, and yesterday we went to lunch at Grimaldi's, and on the trip there, she played this instrumental beat the whole time, and we freestyle rapped, me, my son, and my daughter, to this song the entire trip. But a drop bear is a killer koala bear. It's a legend of the killer koala bear from Australia. Basically, it's called a drop bear because it will drop from a tree on top of you and drain you of your blood and kill you right where you stand. Of course, koala bears are, they eat vegetation. They normally
they're
don't eat
docile
meat.
And they sleep all day.
And they just scream whenever they're upset. I don't know if you ever saw that video of the koala bear screaming on the ground, but it's just horrifying. But but yeah, drop bears are just killer koala bears that are said to attack tourists and drain them of their blood.
Everything in Australia wants you dead anyway.
That's what I hear.
Like, there's really a pie graph that's like things that want to kill you and things that don't. And then with a little asterisk that's like, but they will if they get a chance. All right, guys, that's it for tonight. Keep it scary.
I got a bunch of reading to do tonight, man. I think I'm going to go through all these tales from the crypt. Put myself to sleep that way.
Sounds good.
Gotta love horror comics. Everybody, peace out. Yeah.